Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, April 27th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a new Republican candidate for governor and Minnesota reaction to President Trump's tax cut plan. Republican State Representative Matt Dean is joining the race for Minnesota governor. Dean joins a field of five other Republicans and five Democrats who have already announced. Dean of Delwood is the first Republican in the legislature to enter the race. He says as governor, he would focus on improving conditions for working Minnesotans.
People are very frustrated, particularly middle-class Minnesotans who pay bills, follow rules, show up for work on time. They're paying more and more, and they're getting less and less. And, the value proposition is just not there for them.
Dean is a former House Majority Leader, first elected to the Minnesota House in 2004. DFL Governor Mark Dayton is taking a firm stand against private school vouchers in the closing month of the legislative session. Dayton says he will veto any bill that includes vouchers. He's specifically warning against tax bill provisions related to private school tuition and scholarship donations. Dayton says he doesn't want public funds going to private schools. He also said he's concerned that too many other entities would want their own special tax credit.
The line would be down to Snelling very quickly about all the other worthwhile organizations, hunger organizations and you name it, domestic violence organizations who say, well, we deserve that kind of special consideration as well.
Governor Dayton also repeated his threat to veto any bill that delays or weakens the farm buffer strip law passed in 2015. He said he would only consider some changes next session after the law is fully implemented. Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges has rescinded a top-level administrative appointment announced by Police Chief Janae Harto. Tim Nelson has more.
The police department said it was promoting high-profile Inspector Mike Jost to a deputy chief position and replacing him with former Police Officers Union head John Delmonico to lead the 4th Precinct in North Minneapolis. But a response released later by the mayor said Hodges was rescinding Delmonico's promotion. Her statement said, quote, "We need another kind of leadership for the next phase of the work that we are doing to build trust and transform relationships between police and community." Hodges appointed Harto to a second term and said in her statement the chief had been a good steward of the police department, but the move also comes after a Department of Justice report released last month critical of the coordination between police and City Hall in the wake of the Jamar Clark shooting in 2015. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The new leader of the Minnesota Lottery says he'll rely on his financial management background and lean on professional staff to guide an important agency. Brian Baxter reports.
Governor Mark Dayton named Robert Doty to run the state lottery, which has been without a permanent head since late 2015. Doty has held high-level posts in school governance, but will be new to the gambling field. Doty says despite recent upheaval in the lottery's upper ranks, he's confident it's headed in the right direction.
I think that it's important to continue to work on the perception of the lottery in the eyes and minds of Minnesotans, making sure that people understand how the lottery benefits the state.
The lottery was established by voters in 1988. More than $144 million last year, out of its $600 million in revenue, was poured back into state coffers and environmental programs. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Leading Minnesota business organizations are excited about President Trump's tax cut plan. They're saying it could spur investment, create jobs, and otherwise boost the state and national economies. Martin Moylan has more.
In a news conference, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said Trump's tax plan is unprecedented in its scope, both for taxpayers and businesses.
Under the Trump plan, we will have a massive tax cut for businesses and massive tax reform and simplification.
On the corporate side, Trump's plan would slash the top marginal tax rate from 35% to 15%. The estate tax would go away. Taxes on capital gains and dividends would be cut.
This is a very positive first step.
Charlie Weaver is executive director of the Minnesota Business Partnership, whose members include the CEOs of Minnesota's largest employers.
I think it will result in stronger economy, jumpstart the economy, and grow jobs in Minnesota. That's a good thing.
Weaver said the tax plan could be especially beneficial for companies and industries that can't find ways to lower their taxes as readily as some firms in the energy and other sectors can.
Utilities and some other sectors may not pay the full 35, but retailers, for example, like Best Buy or Target, they pay nearly that full 35%.
Multinational firms can reduce their tax burdens by keeping profits made abroad out of the U.S. Administration officials say international firms would have a one-time tax on overseas profits, and that would provide an opportunity to bring back trillions of dollars in profits earned overseas without facing high taxes. That prospect is especially appealing to many of the medical device firms operating in Minnesota. Jay Mandel is CEO of Medical Alley, whose members include the state's leading medtech and healthcare companies. He says encouraging companies to bring overseas profits back to the U.S. could pay off handsomely.
That could be a great boon, not only to companies investing in jobs within their companies, but also a lot of capital that could be invested here in the United States in new companies and in new innovation.
Mandel said taxing overseas profits at lower rates could also keep companies from following the lead of Medtronic and other big firms that have relocated their legal headquarters overseas to lower their taxes on foreign earnings. The head of the Minnesota Retailers Association, Bruce Newstead, was glad not to see something in Trump's plan.
The border adjustment tax that retailers were not a fan of.
That policy, favored by House Speaker Paul Ryan, would slap a tax of 20% on imported goods. Target issued a statement, too, saying that it was encouraged to see that the border adjustment tax is not a part of Trump's plan. The retailer said such a tax would raise prices for American families on everyday essentials. Trump's plan does promise to deliver big savings to the owners of businesses who now have profits taxed on personal returns. Minnesota Chamber of Commerce Senior Vice President Bill Blazer says that's how the vast majority of small and mid-sized firms operate in Minnesota.
When their business makes a profit, that profit shows up on their personal income tax return. Currently, that top rate is a little less than 40%. It would go down to 15%.
Of course, Blazer says there is the matter of how the planned tax cuts would affect the federal budget and deficit.
We got to debate that issue, how to pay for it. You can't just ignore that.
It's a good bet that Trump's plan will get plenty of debate. The administration says it expects the plan will face challenges from both the left and the right. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A power plant that runs on turkey litter was a point of Minnesota pride a decade ago. It was the first of its kind in the country. Then-Governor Tim Pawlenty lauded the Benson plant in a State of the State address, and the Democratic leader in Congress, Nancy Pelosi, toured it in 2006. But now, changing energy economics could force it to close down. Elizabeth Dunbar has the story.
As officials in the west central Minnesota city of Benson contemplated hosting a new biomass plant, here's what they wanted to know. Would burning turkey litter stink up the town? To find out, they sent a few community representatives to observe turkey litter burning in the UK. Newspaperman Reed Anfinson was one of them.
They knew that I would be honest and straightforward with what I found. If it stunk up the community, I would say it stunk up the community.
Anfinson is owner and publisher of the Swift County Monitor News. The turkey litter burning didn't stink, and odor is now the least of the community's worries. Instead, they're thinking about what happens if it closes.
Biomass is no longer the attractive fuel it once was.
Natural gas, wind, and solar are all cheaper than burning turkey litter. Yet the biomass energy plant has become a big part of the Benson community, accounting for a quarter of the city's property tax revenue.
We have a huge financial interest in it continuing to operate. It employs 45 people directly, another 70 to 100 in ancillary jobs that service the plant.
Anfinson says the plant's employees were told this week that it could close. When it was first built, the Fibromin plant, now called Benson Power, helped solve a problem for area turkey farmers. Former NPR News reporter Marisa Helms provided this vivid description 17 years ago.
He stands before a massive 800-ton pile of manure. This pile of solids undulates in varying shades of brown with bits of feather mixed in with wood shavings turkeys use for bedding.
there was too much manure, and it smelled. So being able to sell it to a power plant was a big deal. In addition, the plant provided new work for haulers. The 500,000 tons of biomass to be burned at the plant each year had to be brought in by the truckload. Biomass is not just turkey litter. It can be wood chips or leftover feedstocks. You have to go back even further in Minnesota history to explain why this type of energy generation even had a chance of coming to fruition. It was 1994, and Xcel Energy was running out of room to store radioactive waste at its Prairie Island nuclear plant. The utility was proposing above-ground dry cask storage, but environmentalists and the DFL lawmakers who agreed with them opposed it. DFL Representative Alice Hausman of St. Paul was on the conference committee that ultimately worked out a compromise.
When it was clear we were going to lose that battle, that in fact we were going to be the first legislature that established an above-ground nuclear storage site, what do we get from it? You know, that's the kind of deal then you finally strike.
The deal included a requirement that Xcel Generator purchase 125 megawatts of biomass power. That mandate is now in question. Hausman says as high hopes for biomass have faded, lawmakers have loosened requirements to help the industry along.
Even today, wind and solar, the economics of that have absolutely proven themselves. I think biomass is still struggling.
Xcel's early venture into wind energy was successful, and the utility has become a wind energy powerhouse. The utility expects wind will generate a third of its electricity by 2021. Xcel officials declined to be interviewed for this story, but said in a statement that biomass power costs up to 10 times more than new wind power. Republican Representative Pat Garofalo, the House energy lead, has been sympathetic to the argument that biomass is too expensive.
The costs to ratepayers are near $100 million a year. The environmental benefits are minimal, and it just hasn't worked.
Earlier this month, Garofalo's omnibus energy bill would have ended the biomass mandate, but he agreed to remove the language, at least temporarily, to allow biomass backers to negotiate a compromise. That includes a group of loggers and haulers on Minnesota's Iron Range. Some of them had threatened to circle the Capitol in their trucks to show how burning biomass for energy is part of their livelihoods. Reporting on politics and the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.